Want to rise above what holds you back? These are the stories of those fighting that battle. It might also be the story of you. I'm Dan Waldschmidt, author of Edgy Conversations and strategist to billion-dollar companies all over the world. This is Mark Menard, author of The Story of You, the guy who knows a thing or two about never giving up. You're listening to Elevating Beyond. Let's get started.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Elevating Beyond with a two-word mission statement, change lives. And I am here actually for the first time in, I think, 200 plus, I don't even know how many episodes I've done of my own show, but everyone listening is used to that. But I have the honor of actually being a client to the guests that I have on my show, and I'll explain that a little more in depth. And by the way, everyone, they're not paying me or anything to have me on here. This is all real. I wanted to have them on because of how amazing the services they're providing. It's Brian and Shannon Miles, who are owners of, I want to say VA every time because I'm so used to it when it was, but it's Belay now.
That's correct.
Yep.
And from what I'm looking at, gosh, it's grown so much over the years. If this is correct, predominantly you specialize in virtual assistants, but you're also doing bookkeeping. Now you have content writing and you have over 700 plus team members. Is that correct?
Mostly. So we have our total headcount now is over 900.
We grew over the
Wow.
And also we've sunset one of our current services, which is content writing, but yes, it's, virtual assistants, bookkeepers, and website specialists that represent kind of that body of folks that are all over the United States representing our clients, just like you.
Well, and you guys are about to hit the 10-year mark, or have you just crossed it on your business?
We will hit our 10-year mark in December of next year.
So we're coming up on 9 right now.
You know what? Like, I love that. In my next book that I have coming out, I've been researching all these different, actually, my awesome assistant through you guys, Jessica, has been helping with that. But I was surprised. I thought the failure rate for businesses was higher in the first year. But it goes up so much from year 1 to 5, but then to make it to the 10-year mark, depending on where you study, like Forbes and the Better Business Bureau says it's like 80% of businesses fail to hit that 10-year mark and don't succeed.
Yeah,
it is
tough.
Not for the faint of heart.
Yeah, it's a rough go for a lot of folks. You know, we feel very fortunate to have hit the market at the right time back in 2010, coming off the heels of the Great Recession. We got ahead of, you know, a few of our competitors in our space with early marketing and so forth. But we also have worked really hard to kind of create a meaningful organization that people aspire to work with. And, you know, we know that that's not necessarily the norm, you know, working with small businesses like we have. You know, it's like Shannon said, it's not for the faint of heart.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I just hit 13 years, and I'm so happy that you said that because, you know, I mean, you guys have had massive success. I mean, you're not even considered a small business because you have over 500 team members. So yeah. You would be, what is that? Medium?
Medium now. Yeah. And the reference you made earlier to EA, you know, for a long time, we had 5 different companies, EA Help being the largest of them all. So when we combined all the companies together to become Belay in 2017, we really felt like that was the time where we switched from running a lot of different small businesses to a medium-sized organization and took on a life of its own.
Did you guys set that up as a, I don't know the state that is that like set up as an S corporation or do you guys, I know you guys subcontract a lot of your team members. Is that how it works with a lot of like your VAs? And then from what I read, you have some of your corporate setup kind of in Atlanta, but you don't do the actual office thing, but you like to be able to have some of that face-to-face with some of the, like, I don't know what you call it, like the higher level leadership, but you've,
Yeah, the way we're organized is we have a group of W-2s that are part of our corporate team.
Okay.
Primarily based here in the Atlanta metro area, but all working remote. So we don't have a physical office space that anybody goes into. And then the other larger group of team members are the 1099 contractors that do the work of the virtual assistants, website specialists, and bookkeepers. So that's kind of how we have the company comprised right now. And totaling all of that together is where we get over the 900. But everybody is based in the United States, which is a little different than some of the other firms that are out there that source through other countries.
Well, and again, speaking as someone who's, I've outsourced on all different areas working with virtually through the video, through assistance, through everything, and something that I've really respected and connected with, and honestly with all companies that are winning, is like I mentioned pre-show, I don't know if I met you guys at Entree Leadership or heard you on one of the podcasts, but going through that culture of Entree Leadership and then implementing it in your own style, of course, those are, I focus so much, I tell so many entrepreneurs this, like until you really master leadership, which we know is a lifelong journey, you'll never make it to that next level as just an entrepreneur. And so many people don't understand that. And I've seen that like just personally with a team that you've built. And I haven't even seen your hiring process. I read about some of it throughout your book, which right. I didn't even mention in the intro. We just hit the top 100 in iTunes, and I'm such an amazing host that I don't even remember to mention either one of your books.
No,
plenty of show left. Sorry.
Keep rolling.
And I don't edit that out. Everyone that listens, if I did, the listeners would be like, what's wrong with this show? Mark didn't screw up. But Brian is the author of Virtual Culture, which I'm holding right here so you can see here backwards, or no, it shows the right way on Zoom. The Way We Work Doesn't Work Anymore, Brian Miles. And then also his lovely wife, Shannon, is the author of The Third Option. And we'll have the links to both of those in the show notes. And we'll just pretend like I said that in the intro and not just randomly right now.
It's all good.
but yeah, so with your culture and the whole leadership part, people seem to like kind of misconstrue how hard it is to intentionally not only build, you can't just read it in a book and then say, all right, this is all going to be part of our culture. Like, can we talk about really some of those pain points, even like your own? I know for me, some of the things I've done, like where I'm having my own personal doubt, like if I implement this whole, we have the no gossip thing.
Yeah.
And I had people telling me from other HR groups, like, oh, you can't have that. That's against the blah, 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 blah. And you know, they, because we're doing it different and we're doing it right, even other business owners will make it look like it's not right sometimes. And can you just give some examples of like when you've really done something that's kind of been what others would see as extreme and some of that doubt that you went through and how you got through it?
Sure.
Yeah.
I know, you know, we obviously have a no gossip policy in our business. And unfortunately, over 9 years, we've had to let go of three people that were good people that just didn't acknowledge the policy. And we make it abundantly clear it's not okay. You know, we don't ever want to work in a toxic environment full of gossip. And we just work really hard to kind of create a culture that is a place where everybody would want to come and work, including the two of us.
Yeah.
You know, and gossip is just nasty. It's not, there's no place for it. So we're pretty adamant about that. But, you know, I would say,
how do you define gossip, Brian, just so everyone,
sure.
A lot of people listening that probably haven't been through, and check out Entree Leadership if you haven't, but yeah, you know, they can think that gossip is only talking about people's private lives, but that's not necessarily what you're referring to, like within your company, right?
Yeah. So how we define it with our employees is that gossip is taking your problem to somebody that can do nothing about it. Essentially, we ask that if you have an issue, you take it up in the organization. So if you were to visualize an org chart, you would take it up, take it to your leader. If you can't take it to your leader, there's HR, you can take it up to them. Mm-hmm. What you cannot do is take it to somebody that's your peer, or worse, to somebody that reports to you, because really you're taking your problem to somebody that they can do nothing about, and then you're only putting them in a very bad position.
You've ruined their experience and contaminated their perspective and still not really gotten to the heart of what was going on.
Right. So it's just something that we found, especially in a virtual culture, it'd be really easy to gossip because everybody's working from home.
Yeah.
I was thinking about that. And you have all your forums and stuff. Go ahead.
So we just really want to make sure that people understand this is what we're for, and this is why this benefits you, you know, and to communicate the why behind what we're trying to accomplish with a policy like that. We're not really policy heavy. But the policies we have, I feel, are there for a reason, and it's on us, it's incumbent on us as leaders to communicate the why behind, you know, a policy such as that.
And you know, from what you're saying, and I have the same thing within my company too, and it's because we want the problems to actually get solved,
right?
Because we care.
Yeah.
It's not like on the other, we're trying to create this dictatorship that's saying no one ever have a problem and the owner and the boss are always right. Don't ever, it's like,
right.
We know that there's problems to be solved all the time. It's take it to the person that can actually help solve the problem, or else, like you said, it gets, not only does it get contagious to your company, like it brings companies down.
It does.
Yeah. And it, you know, we want to be able to take action, right? Like if the larger the organization gets, the more complex it becomes. And so it's impossible for leadership to always know what's really going on the front line. So we need that continuous feedback loop from our team that's on the ground, having the client conversations, vetting all the prospects, executing on the marketing plans, like all of that to really know high level, you know, what's going on. So we encourage that feedback loop. And if it's just going peer to peer, it's not really going anywhere that can affect a change. And so we've led very open-handed with our team. And one of our values is vision, you know, that we're leaders in our industry and we don't accept the status quo. You know, we have a vision for what can be. And so the only way beyond just high level strategic vision, which the leadership team does, we also take a lot of feedback from our team members to continually fight against the status quo and let go of things that don't work anymore and make changes that make sense for where we want to go.
And with saying that too, Shannon, like from what Brian was mentioning earlier too, you said, I think over the years you've had to basically fire, just out of now having over 900 team members, 3 people that actually were gossiping. And between the two of you, obviously we're not mentioning any names or anything, but like when you were going through that with the first one, what kind of doubts, or were you really having any doubts, like with the first person saying, okay, we're really going to pull the trigger now and fire them for gossiping? Like, were you both fully in agreement, or was one of you doubting more than the other, or how was that?
I think, you know, we're in alignment, but I, more than the two of us, so were our other leaders, you know, that you know, being a leader means you make the hard calls, you know, it's not just gumdrops and unicorns, you know, it's in times like that, you've got to make the tough calls. And, you know, especially when it's a great person and they just, you know, they knew that they shouldn't and they did. And that's the result.
And, you know, as tough as those decisions can be, sometimes it's the business owner or the leader's responsibility to care for the organizational health overall.
That's right.
It's bigger than one individual. And so when there are things that happen in the business that surround an individual, like it's our responsibility to say, how does this affect the whole and what's the right thing to do globally, not, you know, for this one particular person. So I think having that perspective makes those decisions a little easier to make. And there's a right and a wrong way to let somebody go. You can do it in a way that you can still walk by them in the grocery store and say hi, you know, like you don't have to completely tear the person down. But there are several reasons why people would exit an organization. Sometimes it just isn't working anymore, and that needs to be okay, because it's our responsibility to care globally for the company.
Yeah, you have to step back and you know, you ask like what's best for Belay, or I ask what's best for Dream. But to be honest to the listeners, starting out 13 years ago, I learned this along the way. And there's personally, I can say there's times where I kept someone on way longer than I should have. And I kept giving, and like you said, it was on me to make that final call. And I realized as a result of me really being a coward as a leader, not only was it affecting our culture, I had some really good people leave.
Yep.
As a result of that. Have you guys had any situations like that that have been like, can you give an example of like how you learn?
I mean, we paid stupid tax too, you know, like,
not just me.
Oh no, it's, you know, we've definitely had battle wounds. You know, there's times where we've had regret. We should have let go of people quicker. And known in our gut, this is not working. Mm. And almost to the point that like we've sanctioned incompetence that they teach at Entree Leadership, you know, to sanction somebody's incompetence only ticks off all the other people that are doing their job well. Yeah. And, we don't want that. We want a team full, or a group full of performers and high achievers in what they do. And when you allow somebody to stick around that really hasn't been doing their job well or what's expected, it only brings everybody else down. And we've had to do that. I mean, there's, without breaking confidences of folks, you know, that have departed, you know, we've held on to a couple of, you know, senior level leaders in our business for too long, and it impacted the business. And, you know, we've had to go back and fix stuff because we waited too long.
Yeah. You know, and a lot of people don't, it's never fun to have to fire someone, but I can just, well, all I've personally learned is I'm able to weigh out the cost of keeping someone on that I know shouldn't be there, and how much worse that after effect is than going through that short term. You want to do it the best you can, but there's never a perfect way to fire anyone. Like, you hope it can be the best, but I'm sure you guys have had, I've had all different types of situations with people in tears or, you know, and it's just like, but, oh gosh,
part when of you don't.
Yeah, that's yeah, part of the.
But if you think about too, like how much time and energy you're spending to make that work when ultimately it's going to end in a departure anyway, you could be taking all of that time and energy and your resources and investing it in the team members who are knocking it out of the park.
That's so true. And speaking of knocking it out of the park, with how much you guys, ladies and gentlemen, not just guys, have grown your company.
Okay, I'm from Ohio too. It's you guys. It's okay.
Have grown your business over, you know, you're pushing a decade and your growth has been phenomenal, but you've continued to, I'm telling this as a client, like maintain, it may be because I learned a lot more too, but the changes I've seen have been even better from when I was with it the first time. And like the selection process of how Meg like spent her time and matched me up with Jessica, who's my VA through you guys. How have you, like, there's a whole other level of your leaders and then developing like other leaders at a whole other level, because obviously you can't be in all the different higher level leadership choices now when you're this, the size that you've gotten. What is like a tip or a strategy that you started to use to really take your leaders to another level within your company?
I think right from the beginning, we've always had the mindset of replacing ourselves in the business, knowing that in order to grow and scale, we couldn't have full control and authority over everything. And so we would move from being generalists in different areas, you know, over the business, to hiring specialists, like people who can go really deep in a particular segment of the business and own that and do a better job than we could. And so I think really getting comfortable with replacing ourselves and almost working ourselves out of a job as the organization's grown, and encouraging our leaders to do the same because they've had to do that as well. and not letting ego get in the way of that, and really finding people who are smarter than you in a particular area that they can own and grow and shape. And I think too, once you delegate the authority over to somebody else, you have to have the fortitude to see them make mistakes and still support them, you know, and you have to have fortitude to resource them and give them freedom to try some things that may or may not work and not jump back in every time something gets screwed up. So it's a constant like tug of war and push and pull of releasing and still verifying that you're heading in the right direction.
Yeah. I think just to add to that, we've consistently told our folks that, you know, the next level of our business will likely, the things that got us there will not be the things that go to the next level. And sometimes that's people, you know, and that's hard for some people to hear, but oftentimes it's systems, it's processes, you know, it's a re-up moment for people that, you know, maybe signed up when you were a small organization and everybody knew each other to, you know, to where it is today. And, you know, there's a really great book called Scaling Up. Bert Harnisch is the author, and in that, you know, he talks about these seasons in these organizations where they hit these valleys of death. And that's those are basically re-up moments for the whole corporation, including its owners. You know, are we ready to go to the next level? And, you know, this is what it's going to take, and it's going to look drastically different than what it's been like so far. You know, so you've got to have a commitment really from everybody kind of when those seasons hit. And, you know, I think that in the book, they do a great job to kind of outline when those things happen around 1, 5, 10, 20 million, 50 million. You know, it's actually reassuring to know that a company that's 100 million is dealing with the same issues that a $1 million company deals with, you know? So that's, you know, it's just being committed and acknowledging that what gets you here will likely not be what gets you there.
Yeah, you're so right. And the way Shannon also put it earlier too, where you said dropping the ego. And I don't know if you saw Brian, but she was giving you the side eye why she was I'm just joking.
Easy now.
I'm totally joking. But no, for real though, like
the other way around probably.
I'm completely joking. But like dropping the ego though, it's so true, because like you said, as you grow, and personally speaking too, there's policies I had that made sense when we had like two or three, we were different like systems for different seasons of your life, of your business. And someone would be doing something the right way, but the policy, whatever it was, just didn't match. It needed to change. Yeah. And it's like, oh crap, that's totally wrong. You were doing the right thing. But we need to completely change that. As to where we see, you know, the wrong example with some other companies. I deal with a lot of bureaucracies with the government and stuff with the way our agency works. And it's so interesting how something will be broken for like 20 years and they'll tell you, you know, that's policy. Like,
right.
There must not ever be a better way. That's in our policy. So it never changes.
Yeah.
Does that make you crazy? It's so frustrating.
We have a good friend of ours that he has a statement that I think is really accurate as it relates to ego. And it's that ego is dilutive to net worth. And I do see that, how ego can get in the way of leaders and it diminishes their value, not just in terms of the money in their pocket, but also in their credibility and their influence. And it's true of, you know, mid-tier, managers and organization all the way up to senior level officers, that you got to keep your ego in check.
Yeah. It's so true. And people respect you more when you open up and you're vulnerable, you know, kind of the older mindset or some of the wrong ones where they think like, you know, you should never admit that you're wrong as the leader and as the boss, like show no. I'm like, No. Like we have our monthly all team meeting. I screwed up. I didn't have enough information, and I'm great at interrupting. I'm super high D and I'm always working on it, but I jumped in without having all the facts. And, I was wrong because I didn't have all the facts from my leader that was running the meeting. And I started being like, oh, we should have been doing this and this and this. And I was saying it respectfully, but she was cool enough, because we've built that relationship over time, that when we met that next week, she's like, hey, I didn't appreciate Mark when you did that. And I could see like, she wasn't trying to be rude. She was just like let down. And I was like, well, what? And I found out I was told I didn't have the facts. So not only did I apologize to her, but I made sure that I got all of our team together. We also have everyone on like an all group WhatsApp and stuff.
Yeah.
And I wanted them all to say, I'm like, hey, at the meeting, I was wrong the way I did that. And I called myself out and I apologized. And I'm preaching to the choir here. I know you guys have, and gals have probably, I don't have to keep saying that.
You don't have to keep saying it. We're good. It's a weird time that we live in this world right now. You're good.
But then that creates the culture. 'Cause then I've had other team members that have made mistakes and I see them publicly take accountability for it. And they did exactly what I did. And they shared it to the whole team and the all group WhatsApp. And I was thinking like, man, that's so cool that she did that. Yeah. But it trickles down from you doing it. And my leader was like, Mark, you didn't have to do that in front of the whole team. I'm like, well, I know I didn't have to, but I felt bad about it. And they were all there when it happened. Mm-hmm. So they deserve to see that I was wrong and I shouldn't have done that, you know?
Yeah, I think you have to capitalize on those moments. I mean, it's so powerful when you can immediately identify something and course correct that you're then modeling for your team what's expected of them. I mean, that's the fact that she was comfortable enough to open up to you and say, hey, like, let's talk about this and not just brush it off or wait for it to happen again. I think that's a sign of a healthy organizational culture.
Yeah. Thank you. As you know, it takes time and we've built that relationship over years. And even going back to some of your hiring, like I know for her and her position, it had stuff that it required, but she actually only has her high school degree and she is the highest up so far as my team members are in like the administrative leadership roles because of like her willingness, the willingness to grow and the grit and the determination and the whole humble, hungry, smart thing of what I've seen over the years. Yeah. And it's so cool. Like that's was an unexpected thing of having a company. Like I never knew how awesome it would be to like help develop other leaders. And I see you guys have people share their different highs and lows.
That's right.
And I'd love to hear a cool story of someone that had an awesome high of something that was like a surprise to you. Maybe it helped them in another area of life of something they learned within your company that you never would have expected when you first started a business.
Yeah, it's funny. You mentioned humble, hungry, smart, you know, Pat Lencioni, ideal team player, resource. We use a lot of their tools.
I was trying to say that was my quote, but I'm just joking.
Trademark. One of the lesser known books that he did was the the three big questions for a frantic family.
Mm.
And so it's taking some of the business principles that the Table Group has implemented with organizations and applying it to a family. It's like, if you are this intentional in your business, why is your home life such a frantic mess?
Yeah.
So Brian and I went through that book as a family. And as a result of that, created like a Miles family plan where we identified what distinguishes us as a family and what our rally cry is for certain seasons of our lives. And we shared that information with our team. And so Hope, who was our assistant that we shared together, actually took her family through that. She's in a little different season. Our kids are a little older than her son, but even still it created alignment with her and her husband. So she shared that experience that they went through the book together. They identified their values. They went offsite for like an overnight to really have a fresh perspective on where they want to head in this next season of their family. And it just, it was so powerful because we're leading not only at work, we're leading at home too. And if you're in a healthy organizational culture, that should carry over into other aspects of your life. It should make you a better mom. It should make you a better dad. It should make you a better spouse or friend. And it was just really rewarding to hear like the impact that had on her. And it when she shared, then it trickled to more people. So those highs and lows are really powerful, and they help forge the team together too.
Yeah, that's so awesome. It's really cool because, well, hope gives everyone hope, like literally, to know that it's like when you're building this business, this thing, it's your baby, but it's so cool that you're able to, it helps you grow in ways you never would have imagined. And then like it keeps coming back of ego, like you're challenging yourself in all these areas and the ripple effect it has on your team, on your leadership. On both ways, like times if they're seeing someone that I have a good friend that was mentored by Dave Thomas. And, you know, his daughter is so grateful for everything she provided for him, for her in her life, except having like really any time with him.
Yeah.
And, you know, and my friend has the greatest things to say about his character and everything too, but you kind of talk to the daughter and it's a different story. And it's not like she was saying he was this horrible. It's just, she said, you know, I never really knew my dad. And that's, I could see how that could happen, but I also can see on the other end of it. I continue to meet other business owners that are winning in their marriage. They're winning in parenting and they're winning in their business. But it's not like a fairy tale to get to the adversity part. You're battling struggles like all the time in each area. And like, what are some ways that kind of you help each other to be more accountable or even aware of like when the tension is about to snap in one area or the other? Like, especially with owning the business together, I'm sure you get asked this a lot being married. But like, okay, we're not having enough time together, or you're constantly on your phone when we're with our kids, or too much with the kids and you're not working enough here on this part. Like, what are some things that you've done to help with all that?
Well, I think what's foundational or what's paramount to that is that there's an acknowledgement that we are 50-50 partners. You know, no, of the two of us, we're equal. You know, there's not this traditional, you know, man over the wife thing. And there's not this, you know, dysfunctional woman over the man thing. There's just, we're working together as a partner. Mm. And we come at this with a whole different set of experiences and personalities. You know, she and I are two entirely different people. Mm. And, you know, celebrating the differences of those things and then leaning in to those strengths when you need to lean into those. And I think that that's what's helped us in a lot of ways accelerate our business is because we're two different people and we can lean into each other's strengths.
And I, you know, we do work from home. So the conversation around boundaries is one that we're constantly navigating. Kids grow up and they're now in eighth grade and fifth grade and have different needs after school and things like that. So I think you just have to have open lines of communication to say what's working in this season of life and what isn't. But Brian's right. I mean, we're gifted differently. So we've been able to find our lanes in the business where he knows where he adds the most value. I know where I add the most value. We know sort of what those big decisions are in the business that we need to make together versus those one person can just run with. And it just takes time and being flexible to know that you're going to try some things that are not going to work and you're going to have to come back around and make a change. But I think the bigger overarching theme for that for me is the relationship between he and I is the most important thing. And the business is a vehicle for us to achieve our vision as a family. So if something's not working between us, that's the bigger issue that needs to be tackled than whatever's going on in the business, because we need to outlast the business, right? We're in this for the long haul. We've been together. Yeah. We've been married for 22 years. So
nice.
Yeah. We have a lot of history together, but we still have a long way to go. So if there's anything in the business that's tearing us apart, like that's got to be fixed fast because that will mess up our ideal family vision.
Yeah. Shannon said it really, really well. I mean, this business is awesome, but this doesn't define who we are as a couple. You know, and I think it's, you know, I see a lot of, you know, business owners that are married and trying to do this, they're wrapped around the axle and they're integrating they're intertwining all this stuff that they're losing sight of what their marriage is.
Yeah. Mm.
And we don't want that. We don't want to be held hostage by a business that's wonderful and has its challenges at times. You know, it's really something that is to benefit our family and the vision that we've set out for, you know, in our 70s, you know, aiming for that is what's most important to us. And this is
a vehicle
to that end.
Yeah. I love that, how you're talking about your marriage outlasts being the higher priority, like the utmost priority, because you're in it for the long haul together. It's like, we're not giving up on each other no matter what. That's awesome. It's a good perspective to have. A lot of people, I don't even think intentionally, you just get caught up in the hustle and the grind. And I know at times both of you probably have, because we're all human beings, of course. But like, what about when you're on vacations and stuff? Do you have some type of rule? Because my wife and I, we're not co-owners, but there's like, my wife be like, you're not talking about, I know you're excited about this next, but you're not talking about anything for work while we're on this. But when you're both co-owners, like, is there, you know, do you guys sit down and say, like, on this vacation, or we're going to block out this time where we'll talk about it, or how does that work?
Yeah, I can't say this would work for everybody, but it just works for us. I mean, we both quit our jobs at the same time to start Belay. And so we just accepted this as part of what work-life integration looks like for us. We talk about the business when we want to talk about the business. We talk about our family when we want to talk about our family. Like, we don't have hard and fast rules around, you know, no technology during vacation, or like, I don't know. We've just been able to navigate what makes sense for our families. Now, it doesn't mean that there haven't been nights where we're both completely spent and it's like, I just need to sit on the couch and veg and watch Succession. Somebody who's more messed up than we are. You know? Like, we're going on a date. We're going to not talk about the business for this date. I think those conversations have been healthy, but in large part, we just see the business as part of who we are, and it doesn't feel stressful to talk about it. Mm. Whereas, like, we enjoy what we do, and sometimes we need to be in a more relaxed environment to talk about some things that, you know, just need to come up over a dinner conversation as opposed to sitting in the office 9 to 5. So we've navigated that. I don't know that I could say everybody should operate that way, but it works.
Sure.
We're also entrepreneurs, I think, at heart. You know, mm-hmm. we own real estate. We were actually opening a brewery here in Atlanta. Mm. You know, so we're doing things around business all the time. So for us, it's kind of fun just to talk about stuff. But, you know, Shannon's right. There are days when the day was crap, and it's just like, no more.
It's like, I can't hear one more.
Yeah. I can't rehash this situation one more time.
Yeah. It's like one more problem, like the straw that broke the camel's back. Like, please, I can't.
And I think you just have to be self-aware, right, in those moments, and just like for your wife to say, hey, like, let's just not talk about it right now. Like, she's saying, I need the space from it too. And I think it's just incumbent on us as individuals to say, like, when enough is enough.
Yeah. Mm.
I love it. And just a couple more things, like, before we wrap it up too, I definitely want to talk about, besides the scooter story, which I know has been rough.
Yes.
Just pre-show everyone. But I always have everyone like open up about, you know, whatever, any area in life that you're comfortable with, whether it's been in your business personally, in your marriage, just of some adversity that you really went through that people maybe haven't really heard before, and how you got through it, and the reason why. And it's so key to this show. I'm always having everyone like share the story behind the story at parts, is because a lot of times I know we think we're all alone in our struggles, like whether it is with our company, with our marriage, with our parenting, and just hearing someone else going through something and getting through it. It's not like it's even giving the how all the time. It's just like, wow, like, they're looking at Brian and Sharon and they're like, they have this incredibly successful company. You know what I mean? People are, they're both authors. You know how that can look. And so they hear that you've gone through something and it's just like, wow, if they've been through this, or Brian has, or Shannon has, then then I can get through whatever I'm going through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You want to start?
Yeah, I think it's probably a story that's similar to a lot of people in startup. And it was a pretty significant time for us. We went through a season where our son basically got an illness that was not definable. And his sweet little boy at the time, and he
three
and basically developed a rash that wasn't like anything I've ever seen. It was basically the way we were told is 1 in 50,000 people get this, and they only had known 4 cases in Atlanta, which is a very large city at the time this happened, and finally found the conclusion of it. But this was during the middle of our startup, like a year into our business, when things were tight and tough. Wow. And we were doing, you know, a lot of things in the business and
watching our 401k deplete.
Yeah, because we used all of our money. Yeah. The background on that is that we left our jobs the same day in late 2010 to start our company. We cashed out all of our 401k money as our startup capital. So we were all in on this concept. And then we had this kind of crap healthcare plan at the time where it was this really expensive plan. And I was just feeling the weight of our son being sick. And then our daughter got the crazy flu at the same time. And she was admitted to the same hospital where he was. And then, and we finally navigated that. And I got home the following day and I thought I was having a heart attack. And fortunately it was just me being incredibly stressed out, but I spent a day in the hospital and 24 hours being monitored. And I just kind of got to this place of just like, man, this is not for the faint of heart. Like owning a business is no joke. And there's people relying on us, and including my wife and 2 kids. And, you know, I've worked hard on my health, you know, and to keep stress at bay as best I can. That was a really tough time. It was kind of, I was 37 when that happened. And, I've always kind of seen myself as more of an invincible kind of guy and kind of a tough, grit guy. And that really kind of humbled me. And I used that to our advantage, I think, or my advantage in terms of, you know, taking care of myself. And
yeah, it was a wake up call.
Yeah.
Well, was that, Brian, it was more like anxiety, like an anxiety attack or something, really? Because I've had something similar. Is that what they ultimately found out?
I had probably 5 or 6 cups of coffee and I had this crazy thump. Yeah. And it felt like something I never felt before.
It's scary.
And, you know, it was early in the morning and I was overwhelmed by the stuff going on in our family with our kids' sickness and, you know, mounting health insurance bills and, you know, a lot of things that get done in the company that day.
Yeah.
And it had compounded to a place that it felt overwhelming. And so I chugged a bunch of coffee and I think that
got up early and didn't eat and didn't take care of himself.
And thank you, Brian. And Shannon, Will, if you're open and wanting to share anything, definitely too. And I was just thinking without God, because this could be a whole other conversation, but I know something that's really cool is you openly talk about God. I believe it's even in your, I think I even read it in as a client and some of your stuff.
That's in our core, he is in our core values and our mission statement.
And when you're having that, you know, cause I know personally, I believe in God too. And that's at the end of the day, like it's so true. Like having a bit, like, especially this day and age of being an entrepreneur is so like sexy looking and everyone, but it's not for the faint of heart, like literally. And I don't preach down people's throats, but without God, like, I don't know those times when I've had that. And it's like, you don't have an answer to all these problems. Like your child is sick. And it's like, if I couldn't just give it to God, like at the end of the day, I don't know what I would do, you know?
Yeah. I mean, being a business owner, I think requires a tremendous amount of faith, especially if you want to grow. You're going to have to put your faith in other people. You're going to have to put faith in your processes and the systems that you've set up. So for us, growing the business is just an extension of the faith that we already had in God, that He was calling us to do this, that it was the right time. And that even if it, like, there's no guarantee of success, right? That's why it's a risk. Yeah. But even if it didn't work out, that overall, we would be okay. Like we would be able to recover. If, as long as we're solid, we could sell all the things and like, it's going to be fine. And so that faith acted as sort of a safety net for me, especially in the early days, but has carried through seasons of growth and trials and employee changes and self-doubt that I don't think ever really goes away. I think my sort of dark night of the soul was a couple of years into the business when I just felt completely unequipped and inadequate to lead at the level that the organization was growing. Like I thought, I am not enough to serve in this capacity. And I just had a breakdown moment in a coffee shop in Atlanta, reading Brené Brown's Gifts of Imperfection and having my Bible in my journal and just like laying it all out. And I just settled on throughout, you know, counseling and really doing some deep work that no one's ever fully enough, but you always grow and can get there. And knowing who I am in God and what my identity looks like there is the foundation to grow from. So that was definitely a turning point for me.
That self-doubt, thank you both for opening up about all this, because we all go through that more than people even know at times. And they see these different leadership roles and it's like we can start overthinking, and it can get scary when you really look at it like, oh my gosh, I'm responsible for not only like my family, this, but all the revenue. We have all these other team members, they have family, and it's like you can't handle it as a human being. And then you can start thinking like, wait, am I good enough to be doing that? And it if you overthink it, or I shouldn't even say if, but when, and I like how you said it doesn't ever go away, because I think it would be lying to everyone to be like, well, I've just mastered that whole fear and doubt thing. Like, yeah age 38 went away. Like, no, you just kind of, it's like a muscle that you kind of continue to grow and develop. And I know I'm able to look back at life and be like, hey, I kind of have to remind myself, like, I got through this a year ago. If I made it through that, like, we can get through this. And it kind of puts you in check. But those moments when it really hits you hard, you can kind of, I think everyone listening, you know, can relate. If they haven't had a time where they feel like they're sort of losing their mind, then they haven't. And just wait.
I heard a really great quote not too long ago, and I think it's really actually applicable to what we're talking about. The gist is that mountains don't happen without earthquakes. And you know, the story that's, you know, of a strong person in front of you likely has navigated dark times or hard times to get to that place. And I think that that's just a really beautiful image. You know, that beautiful mountains that you see came at a cost, and they navigated some hard things to get to that place. And so I think that's true of our souls, of us as people, as leaders. You know, it's you know, we have our own kind of passage, if you will, through things like that from time to time.
It's so true. I love that. And it takes that adversity. Yeah, those earthquakes create those beautiful mountains. There's one other one I've heard that's, and I'm the king of knowing quotes and not knowing who said them, but I know it wasn't me.
You can just take credit for them all.
I definitely didn't say that, but it's worry is a misuse of your imagination. And I have to remind myself of that all the time, because like, we want to strategize, but when it leads into being up all night and trying to solve I love how we think we can solve all those problems in that one night being up all night. And then it's like, okay, I just wasted 8 hours.
I needed a rest. Yeah, the self-limiting beliefs, I think, really are the lid to growing your organization and yourself. So I think the more you can spend time busting through those and telling yourself the truth about the situation, that if it's not you, then who's better equipped? Somebody who's going to steward a company well, that God's blessing is on, like, why wouldn't it be you? Why would it be somebody else?
And also, like, beyond that, being a virtual company, the way you're set up, and you guys have to check out both Shannon's book, The Third Option, which I mentioned in the intro, of course, right? And Brian's book, Virtual Culture, that I have right here, if you can see. But I love how you go through all the different, you just break down everything we're talking about and so much more for anyone that's really wanting to build whatever your business may be from the ground up. There's so many principles you have that apply and your different core values and how you've brought those teams together virtually without needing to physically be together. And you have really built those, like, you've just built that whole team up to, and I can tell people not just from reading it, but from being an actual client. And it's amazing. I love seeing people. They even have a no jerk policy, which I freaking love that.
Test.
Yeah.
Yes.
Test muster. Yeah.
Actually, after the show, they're going to be like, we're firing you as a client, Mark, after this interview. That's awesome. But this has been phenomenal. I really appreciate both of your time today, Brian and Shannon, and opening up, you know, and just sharing all these truth bombs and letting everyone know, you know, as we're going. Well, first of all the listeners, now that you know about this, feel free to, you can reach out and ask me anything. I'll be happy to testify for how, like, truly awesome their company is. Like, it's a game changer. And when you're in the right season, you need it as a business owner. I probably could have used it sooner rather than later. But where's the best place for everyone to go to find your company, check out your books and all that awesome stuff?
Yeah, you can get to anywhere you need, probably from belaysolutions.com. My personal Instagram is at Shannon K. Miles. The company Instagram is belay_solutions. And Brian's Instagram is
at Brian Miles.
At Brian Miles. Yeah. With a Y. Brian.
With a Y.
And we'll have it all in the show notes. Awesome. Jessica will be helping with that.
So. Yay, Jessica.
Thank you, Jessica.
And you know what? To tell you both, in all honesty, as the owners, and I don't say this lightly, like, she is a freaking, like, rock star. And here's what I love about it. And I think here's what wasn't successful before. And I won't go to make this a whole nother hour show, but, like, she's so good at problem solving. And that was the issue that I was having, I think, before with some different awesome assistants that were really well organizationally and like were very high C, but hadn't built the problem solving, and they would get more paralyzed when it wasn't just like doing tasks. Mm-hmm. And with Jessica, like, she's very, very organized, but she's not afraid to dive in and try stuff out, because she always knows with me, like, something is better than nothing. And that's what's been, like, such a huge game changer. And in my own experience, I haven't seen that with a lot of assistants that I've worked with in the past, even with other companies. And so I give her, like, I give praise to her for being awesome. And I give praise to both of you that it proves that doesn't just happen by accident. Like, how, and she told me the hiring process. She was like,
intense.
Yeah. They put you through a lot. And I'm like, that's why they're getting awesome people. Yeah.
Not everybody gets to work here. You know, it's not a free marketplace exchange. It's actually a grueling effort to become one of our virtual assistants or bookkeepers or webmasters. It comes at a cost. And you know, we get about 2,000 resumes a month right now that come in. Wow. People work for us. And so when you join as our team, that's something that, you know, we let them know, like, hey, you joined an elite team of people that really want to serve our clients really well. And so we're looking for things like that. So it's a testimony to our talent acquisitions team.
Yeah.
And to the kind of the things that they put in place to find great people like Jessica.
Yeah. As we're wrapping up, to Meg too, who was part of your,
yes.
Got to give a shout out to her. She has been phenomenal. She helped pair me up with Jessica. So Meg, you're amazing as well. And Brian and Shannon, thank you so much. I really appreciate this. This has been great. And I look forward to meeting up in person eventually. And if you guys are ever here, we'll have you in the studio or at a future event, or who knows.
Thank you for having us on and for being an awesome client.
Yeah. Thank you for the review. Yeah.
It's an honor. It's an honor. And everyone, check them out. Everything will be in the show notes. Never settle, never give up, and keep elevating beyond.